Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on this episode, we have Wolf Richter of WolfStreet.com. But first, we live in the age of the refugee. Climate refugees, Syrian, Libyan, Afghani, Iraqi, Yemeni, war refugees, and now NERP refugees are pouring across the world seeking safe haven. NERP, negative interest rate policy. As Tom Petty might observe of today's bond investor, somewhere, somehow, some central banker must have kicked you around some. Tell me why you want to buy that sovereign bond. Revel in your negative yield, son. Money, it don't make no difference. Literally, everybody has to find yield, you see. You don't have to live like a refugee. Stacy?
God, if people are still here after that song, that rendition of the refugee song from Tom Petty, well, Max, we're going to talk about some of the crazy stuff happening in the world, the financial world, thanks to the central bankers and their repressive policies. You know, we see a lot of refugees coming into Europe because of repressive, well, bombs falling on them and repressive leaders and wars and stuff like that in the financial markets. Why this spike will perforate yield chasers. And this is from our guest coming up, Wolf Richter, WolfStreet.com. And he says, NERP refugees, we've come to call them, they're trying to escape their central bank's iron-fisted financial repression where bond buyers are guaranteed to lose money if they hold bonds to maturity, which many institutional investors need to do, such as pension funds and insurance companies. It impacts everyone since they're managing the money of regular folks. And now we've all been captivated by the horrifying scenes of hundreds of people piling into a rickety old boat and crossing the Mediterranean and many of them sinking. Well, this is the financial equivalent of that. Many investors and your pension funds, unknown to you perhaps, are piling into very risky, rickety boat equivalents of ETFs and bonds and all sorts of stuff that they shouldn't possibly be in, but they're needing to escape repression.
Yes, rickety boats of bond ETFs, exchange-traded funds, sinking in the Mediterranean of quantitative easing. It's a brilliant image. Wolf Richter is a genius writer, one of our favorites.
Wolf, tell us, these NERP refugees, even classic bond investors, some of the most conservative, safe investors out there, they are pouring into stocks for their dividends. What are your thoughts on this? And explain to the audience what that means to see bond investors pouring into stocks for dividends.
Hi, Max and Stacy. Thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, NERP refugees are largely institutions that have to earn a yield on the investments for future payouts, such as life insurance companies and pension funds. And so if they don't earn any yield, so if the yields are actually negative, and if it costs them money to hold bonds, their entire business model collapses. And this is a big issue in Europe. It's going to be a big issue in the United States. It's already an issue in Japan. There's close to $13 trillion worth of negative yielding bonds out there. So everybody in the business is trying to figure out what to do to get out of this. So one of the options is to go into really crappy bonds, like really high risk junk bonds. Another option is to go into stocks that have a dividend yield. And for yield investor, this is an incredibly risky step because a bond has to pay a coupon. And if it doesn't pay, if the company decides not to pay the coupon, the bond goes into default and the bankruptcy lawyers are coming out of the woodwork and the game changes. If a company decides to cut the dividend because the stock market goes down and it doesn't want to pay the yield anymore, it can do that with the decision of the board of directors. And there are no consequences. And it happens all the time. In a market downturn, dividends get cut left and right, and that causes the stock to swoon. So now these bond investors, not only do they lose the dividend yield, it'll go to zero, but now their capital shrinks. And this is a terrible strategy it's maybe a great strategy for stock investors who are willing to take those risks, but for bond investors who are trying to find an escape from negative yields, that is a very, very risky strategy, and they can lose a lot of money in no time, and the entire business model is based on having predictable returns.
All right, well, let me jump in here for a second, because what you're talking about here is you're saying that for some money managers, they quote, as you say, they have to get a certain rate of return. In the case of a pension fund, the assumptions are that the pension fund is going to make, you know, 5-7% a year, and that the people who rely on that income after they retire in their pension fund, they need that income. And so what you're saying is that the fiduciary, the money manager, the person responsible for that fund, they have an obligation to look for that yield. And what's happening is that common sense is being trumped by the statutory need to seek yield, even if that yield comes with a guaranteed loss, like buying a negative interest rate bond to try to capture a greater fool theory trade up, or buying emerging market debt that's insolvent, or buying coupons or dividends on stocks that are bankrupt. So in other words, the law is working in an incredibly negative way, in that they're not these managers, these fiduciaries, they have no option. They can't stand up. They can't say, hey, you know, you're forcing me. It's like being working at a prison or something, a firing squad, essentially. You know that you can't opt out of the firing squad. You're saying you're employing me to be part of the firing squad. I mean, is that can you build on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, look at what's happening with emerging market bonds. I mean, that is one of the places the NERP refugees are trying to seek refuge in, these are, like Mexico issuing bonds in dollars and in euros. Now, these are foreign currency denominated bonds issued by emerging market countries like Mexico, like recently Argentina again, Russia, others. So what happens with these foreign currency bonds in the future, and has happened many times in the last two decades, is that these countries can't come up with the foreign currency to service that debt. And, a country that issues its own debt and borrows in its own debt cannot go bankrupt. They can always print enough money. They can destroy the currency, but they can't go bankrupt. If a country borrows in a foreign currency, it can go bankrupt. And that happened to Argentina, and that almost happened to Mexico in 1994 with the tequila crisis, and it got sort of bailed out. Bondholders got bailed out really by the IMF and some of the big banks. We had the Asian financial crisis. I mean, the Russian financial crisis. There's all kinds of issues with these foreign currency bonds. Suddenly these countries cannot come up with a foreign currency to pay these bonds. You know, that is a huge risk, and it happens. And now, because these conservative investors, these pension funds, have to have some yields, they have to have 5%, you know, they're going after the riskiest emerging market foreign currency bonds, and that are almost guaranteed to cause problems in the future.
Well, of course, during the 2008 financial crisis, what we saw was Iceland go bankrupt, and a lot of that was due to a similar situation. And the entire population had mortgages in euros or Swiss francs because those were lower yielding currencies. They could borrow there at 2% or 3%, but they suffered a massive currency risk when their own currency fell by 80%. So, you know, everybody admonished them, saying, well, they should have known better. These stupid people shouldn't have taken out a mortgage in their foreign currency. But here you're saying the smartest investors in the world are pouring money into places like Mexico, but also companies like Petrobras were issuing dollar bonds too, weren't they? 100-year bonds.
Right. And Petrobras earns money in dollars. And so that's defensible. With some of the Russian oil companies too, their markets are in the developed world largely, and they earn foreign currency to service the debt. Governments don't do that. Now, Petrobras is a government-owned entity, but it still has revenues that come in dollars. You know, the government of Mexico has revenues that come in pesos, and it's tax revenues. And when the peso plunges, it has to convert these plunging pesos into dollars. It takes more and more pesos to convert to dollars to pay off or to service that debt. And then it can't service that debt. It doesn't have enough. It can't buy enough dollars, and it doesn't have enough dollars. And, you know, it needs help. And the help comes in form of loading, Mexican taxpayers with more debt, and comes from big banks, and comes from the IMF and other places. I mean, you have a typical taxpayer funded bailout.
It's Double Down with Max and Stacey.
Oh, yeah, it's a new show on Sputnik Radio.
Okay, and Now, Wolf Richter of WolfStreet.com, you're over there in San Francisco, which, you know, you're talking about bubbles and bonds and emerging market bonds and stock prices and stuff like that, but there's no bigger bubble than the San Francisco housing market. What is happening there? That's also tied with a lot of foreign money, and this is, you know, all this money flowing around the world seeking yield. Are they finding yield there? Is this ever going to peak there in San Francisco?
Yeah, well, they were finding yield, and that yield has sort of gone away now. The prices have gone to such height that it is very difficult to extract that kind of rent from people that live here. And you know, with a one-bedroom apartment going for $3,000 a month and these kind of things, you run out of people who can pay that. So now there's a huge supply of new units coming on the market. San Francisco has seen a phenomenal building boom in the last few years. And so there are thousands of new units coming on the market. Job creation has recently stalled. You know, Twitter and other companies are laying off. So a lot of the startups are in trouble. The Chinese money, from what I hear from the industry, has sort of disappeared, and they're trying to fight a capital flight in China, and so that has had impact. And so now we're seeing a lot of pressure coming onto the San Francisco housing bubble. We've already seen some of the major landlords announce that they're going to have an earnings problem because of the San Francisco situation. We've seen condo prices wobble, and that's really the issue in San Francisco is condos and apartments. We don't have a lot of single-family homes here, and none of them being built.
Okay, and in the last few minutes we have here, I wanted to also mention that you have an article on WolfStreet.com about Microsoft and what that show, what Microsoft's earnings and their share price at the moment, what it indicates about the market. It goes with all this other stuff, the NERP refugees. What? Tell us about the P.E. ratio there. Tell us what we're seeing in Microsoft.
Well, Microsoft has declining earnings. It has declining sales. It lost. It wrote off $12 billion on its purchase of Nokia and some other items. It has shrinking margins. It has botched its entry into mobile, and mobile is the big thing. It has spent a fortune doing that. It's stuck in the PC end of the business, and that's withering. It has a fairly good a cloud business, and that's growing pretty rapidly, but that's not making up for the losses elsewhere in its business. So you have a company that's shrinking, whose sales are declining by a rate of close to 10% year over year, and you have a P/E ratio above 40. And, you know, this is completely insane to have a P/E ratios at that range. You know, you expect a company to be able to double sales and double profits within a year or more. You know, you're paying for growth. This is a declining situation here. So you need to have a P/E ratio in the single digits. And instead, we have a P/E ratio of over 40. So you're talking about regular GAAP earnings, not the kind of adjusted earnings that analysts are talking about. And they like to take out the bad stuff, you know.
Yeah, now they just bought LinkedIn to try to buy their way into social media. We have Verizon just buying Yahoo to try to buy their some eyeballs there. It kind of reminds me of the dot-com height back in the year 2000. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting that they're buying sort of the old tech, Verizon buying, you know, the one of the oldest of these media companies, Yahoo. Microsoft buying LinkedIn. LinkedIn has run into trouble too. You know, it's not a vibrant company anymore. They have all sorts of issues. Their stock price has got hammered down. They have growth issues. You know, it may be that Microsoft isn't buying growth there. They were trying to, but it may not be the case that they're getting growth out of LinkedIn. So, it's pretty, and Microsoft's got a ton of money. They can issue AAA rated. You know, they can issue lots of bonds for almost nothing, and they can issue stock to buy companies. So they have a huge amount of financial wherewithal, but they're blowing it left and right on these things. And that's just market insanity. If you allow a company like Microsoft to have that kind of stock price, you know, if it makes these kinds of errors time after time with a shrinking income statement, you know, you just
right. The P/E ratios, the price over earnings, trading at again multiples that usually accompany massive market corrections. I think that's what we're saying. All right, Wolf Richter, thanks so much. That's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Wolf Richter of WolfStreet.com. Until next week, bye, y'all.